Hi,
I'm Julie Carter, Vice President for Mission Services, and I'm so pleased to bring you this installment of Word and Deed, where we visit with colleagues from around St. Mary's Healthcare System to hear their experience working within our ministry. Pam Jones is a nurse at St. Mary's Hospital in Athens, working in the inpatient rehabilitation unit. Pam speaks about the challenge of caring for her patients when restrictions had to be imposed, limiting family and visitors. She describes how her faith instilled courage in her despite uncertainties with the coronavirus. Most of all, I think you'll come to understand that she views her time with her patients as sacred. I hope you'll enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Pam Jones. I'm an RN here at St. Mary's in Athens. I came here as a student. I'm a late-in-life nurse, a second career. And I came here, I did some clinicals here. I did some at Clearview in Monroe, that's now Piedmont, some at Piedmont here in Athens, and here at St. Mary's. And then when it came time for my practicum, I had asked for St. Mary's because I felt real at home here on my clinicals. And it looked like that wasn't going to happen. And they had already taken all the students they were going to take. And I was going, I think, to Clearview. And I got a call and said that a preceptor, someone had agreed to be my preceptor on the fifth floor, which is where I had done my student clinicals. And I had loved it there. And so Stephen Moon, I had agreed to be preceptor. And I learned so much from him. And I just felt right at home there. So when it came time to apply, I applied at St. Mary's, and I applied several other places as well, but I started putting in my applications, and before I graduated, I heard that I was going to be hired on the fifth floor, not on fifth floor med-surg, but on rehab. I didn't care where on fifth floor. I had just fallen in love with all of them and had such a good experience there. So when Julie reached out to me, I said I would be glad to do this and tell you why I love St. Mary's.
Aw. So how long have you been with us?
5 years.
5 years now.
Uh-huh. May will be my 5-year anniversary.
And I think I see a daisy pin.
I have 2 daisy pins. I've asked Miss Jan if I can get mine broke this week, my middle one, with my little 5 daisies on it. So I love my daisy pins because those are from my patients.
Exactly.
And I love them. So, and that's a program I'm glad y'all put into practice here at St. Mary's.
So were there any particular patients that come to mind when you think about those Daisy Awards?
Absolutely. I like to treat all my patients like they're my family, but some just, you know, are just closer to you. I mean, all of them I treat the same way, but some you just seem to bond with and with the family. And the first Daisy Award, that dear couple that came here.
Oh,
yeah, and came back for me to get the little pen and everything. I was so thrilled and just so happy to see them. That's one reason I like being on rehab is because we have our patients for so long. We have them 7 to 14 up to 21 days. Some we've had for months. I like not having the quick turnover. I like having the relationship with the patient.
Yeah.
Today I was feeding a one-on-one feeder with my little patient and trying to make sure that I give the patient their dignity, you know, as I'm feeding them, try to talk to them about family and make them feel comfortable. And this patient pointed at her little red sponge adapter and I said, would you like to feed yourself? And she said, yes. And so I put it on her fork, and she started. And then sometimes I would have to put the food on it for her, but I would hand it to her and let her put the food in her mouth. And then I like for them to feel comfortable with me. And so she's doing her mouth funny, and she says, my teeth. There's something in my teeth. Uh-huh. And could you use a fork as a toothpick? So, you know, I just like being that close to my patients and see them achieve, see them come into rehab and not be able maybe to do for themselves. And their goal is to be able to do for themselves and get back home to their family. Yeah. So that's my reward when I see him go home to their family. And my first Daisy Award, he got to go home to his family. He didn't get to stay, but he at least had that time that he got to go for a while.
Yeah. So what I love about hearing you talk is how you're really focused on like that whole person, and it, you're not approaching it as a transaction. We got to get you fed now. And instead, it's part of that relationship building and seeing them, you know, to the very best that they can.
Absolutely.
You know, be independent, be, you know, retain that sense of wholeness and dignity.
And dignity. Yeah. I always try to let them keep their dignity. Whatever I'm having to do for them,
I want
them to have their dignity, because that's the last thing. That they have, some of them.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. What made you change careers? It seems like you have such a heart for this. Oh. I'm surprised you didn't start out as a nurse.
All right. Well, I wanted to be a nurse. I married young, and I had a very unfortunate first marriage, I'll just say that.
Yeah.
And then I met my soulmate and had a wonderful marriage, wonderful family. I had my daughter from my first marriage, and then a daughter and a son with my husband. And the children are grown, and the two youngest came back. I'd always wanted a white Christmas, always. I'd always dreamed of a white Christmas. So in 2010, we had Snowmageddon in Georgia, and we had a beautiful white Christmas. Our grown daughter was going to UGA, commuting back and forth, because she was sort of a homebody, and she didn't like that dorm. So she was living at home. My son had moved to Athens, getting out on his own. He's now a fireman and EMT here in Athens, Clark County. But at that time, he was still working at Lowe's, finding himself, you know, and living in this area. So they came home for Christmas. My husband and I owned two small businesses. I had a one-woman antique shop I'd had for 30 years. And he has an old hardware store, one-man hardware store, that's over 100 years old. So we work side by side. We're always together. We raised our children in the city park. I was the town mom. They had home moms. You know, I was the mom to come and get snacks and watch the TV in the little room in my store, that kind of thing. So it was really a Norman Rockwell kind of existence for a while there. But I had always wanted to go to college. That was my biggest regret in life. Number one, you should have gone to college. My parents wanted me to go to college, but I was hard-headed. I married young. I made a mistake, and it was a big mistake. So I adapted to that. My husband was a furniture craftsman. I was a quilter. We had the antiques on the side. We did shows all over the country. And so we just had a neat life. So we never took time off because we owned our own business. We never really had a day off. When we were at work, I got the kids off the bus on the corner, you know, and they stayed with us, and then we went home, and that was our life. So we decided, we had some friends, one had been sick, we hadn't been to see them. When you work for yourself, you just don't have time to do the things you like to do, and family things, right. And our kids were almost grown, my weight had just moved out, Jenny was going to UGA, Libby was already gone, my oldest daughter is a nurse, and she was already out on her own. So it was like, now or never, we're going to take 2 weeks off, and we're going to be with our children, we're going to go visit people. It was like a staycation, and it was just 2 weeks off. We put a note up on the door on Christmas Eve, and we will be open January, whatever it was. So on December 26, 2010, the children had come home for Christmas. It snowed, and I could show you pictures from that day. I like to say I looked like a child, the joy on my face, because we were playing in the snow with our children. And I felt like a child, and I can see it in those pictures. I don't know if anybody else can or not, but me and the kids hugging our snowmen, and I just loved that day. It was, I say it was the best day of my life, and it was the worst day of my life. So we had fixed a pot of soup. It's nothing better on a cold day than a pot of soup. So we had our vegetable soup going, and we all came in and ate except my daughter. She wanted to finish her little, she was making a little snowman out on the deck. She wanted to finish that little snowman. So we ate, and then she came in, and it had gotten a little cold. So she just poured a little soup in a boiler on the island. Well, my husband had built that island, and we had the kids, so the eyes of the stove were 8 inches from the edge. Where the little kids, it was a tall counter, old store counter, and the kids couldn't reach the ice. So, and it was electric. Everybody thinks it's gas because of what happened, but no, it was electric. I was on low, on warm, warming her soup. So my husband, his normal thing to do was come in from outside. He had gone back out, probably to, I don't remember now, but I would, my guess would be to get wood for the fire. So he had on all the layers of clothes that he had worn that day. He had on a cotton long sleeve t-shirt. He had on a Timberland polyester sweatshirt with a hood. He had on a Carhartt thick work shirt, the real thick canvas that you have to struggle with each button, then the sweatshirt, and then his jacket. So only thing different about people say how did what happened. The only thing different was the amount of clothes he had on. Otherwise, he did what he always did. He came in, he leaned against the counter, and he was watching the, he wanted to see the score of the football game. You know how they have the football games on the holidays. So he wanted to see the score of the football game. So we have a little bitty TV in the kitchen, and the score sort of goes around the corner. So he leaned forward to see the score before he went and took all these layers of clothes off, and his coat and everything went up in flames in front of our eyes. And I was sitting at the end of my counter, and I was on my laptop, and I had looking at those pictures and reliving the day. And I was typing a perfect end to a perfect day. And I looked up, and my husband was on fire in front of me. His clothes just went up. They were very flammable polyester. So I went around one side of the corner. My daughter went around the other side of the counter. And my husband is pulling out all these clothes, and he's trying to get into the unbuttoned layer. And I'm pulling on one side. My daughter's pulling on the other. And we had a old house. We have a 100-year-old house that we've done all the work on ourselves. My husband paid $1 for it to keep it from being burned for a fire drill. And then we've poured love and work into it, and doing it yourself, you don't finish everything. So we had the kitchen, we had sheetrocked over the door originally that goes to the outside because we just weren't at stage to put a porch out there. So a few years earlier, I had said, you know, if we ever had to get out of this kitchen, we have to run down a hall and another hall to a door. I said, we really need to put that door. And we had left it framed up outside, but we had sheetrocked over it on the inside. So about probably 2 years or less than that, we had put the door in and a little small porch with steps right there. And so we're pulling on the clothes. My husband is on fire in front of my eyes. And I yell, my instincts kicked in, and I backed up, and I opened the door, and I yell, snow. And he looked at me, and I said, roll. And he rolled down the steps and onto his back in the snow. And they say that's what saved his life. And he laid in the snow till we could get help. The clothes were still burning. The rugs, the clothes that dripped on were burning on each side of the island. I remember running in, grabbing one in one hand and one in the other so the house didn't burn down while we went to get him help. And I pulled the rugs outside in the snow, and I took the clothes off of him, and I was afraid they were going to set the shrubbery on fire and set the house on fire while we were gone waiting on the ambulance. So I put those, I got a mop bucket, and I put snow in the mop bucket, and I put the clothes, and that's what it took to extinguish those clothes. So those clothes would never have quit burning until they were gone. So we, I had him lay in the snow until we could get help. And, of course, there were 8 inches of ice on the expressway, and there was all flights were grounded. We went to Madison ER, and we were blessed. There was a nurse. One of the nurses had been a fireman, a male nurse. He had been a fireman and an EMT first. And then the female nurse had years of experience. And so in our little local hospital, we were blessed to have somebody that knew a third-degree burn when they saw it and knew they needed to get him to Augusta immediately. They knew to start fluids and get him to Augusta. So National Ambulance drove us on 8 inches of ice to Augusta, and because nothing could fly. Anyway, long story short, we had our businesses closed. We were the one man, woman, and man, so our businesses were closed. We had to live on credit card. After a couple of days in the waiting room, a kind lady came to us, and our nurse had called her, and she said, "We have a house here on the grounds. It's called the Chavis House, and it's for families of burn victims." Jeffrey Chavis was a fireman from South Carolina, and his family, after he was tried, they tried to save him at doctors in Augusta, but they weren't able to. Family appreciated the effort, so they built this little house down there on the hospital grounds, so long-term families can stay there. So she told us, and she said, "I think y'all qualify." And so we had meals brought to us by churches every day, hot meals. We had the firemen from South Carolina and around driving in and unloading shampoos and hair dryers and whatever you needed. They'd get it for you. Anyway, I stayed there. My husband in the hospital, I was with him all the time. We had one really bad experience where his new skin graft, he was left. This is where I learned how to be a nurse. I learned how to be a good nurse and how things not to do. So he had some wonderful nurses, don't get me wrong. But this one day, he got left. They took the bandages off his brand new skin graft for Dr. Mullins, the head of the burn center, to come in and assess. And they left him laying on a sheet for about 2 hours till Dr. Mullins got there, and he had adhered to the sheet. So anyway, from that point on, he didn't want anybody to touch him but me. And so Dr. Mullins started training me to be a nurse. And he was the head of the burn center. He's just passed away, lost to the world, but he was the head of the burn center. We didn't know it. We were told what doctor we'd have when we got there, and then this handsome man walked in. He had on scrubs and L.L. Bean boots, and my husband pointed at the boots, and he relaxed. He said, "I like him." And that was Dr. Mullins, and he said, "Hi, I'm Fred Mullins. I think you know my uncle." He said, "He's Fred Mullins from Rutledge. That's who I'm named after, and I understand you take good care of him in his hardware store, and I'm taking over your case, and I'm going to take good care of you." So we were in God's hands almost at that point. So Dr. Mullins did everything for us. We had these chuck pads that were like $600 from NASA that would not adhere to the skin. We had everything. And my husband had third-degree burns over 21% of his body. The rest was second degree. It was all on the back. The polyester hood had saved his face. It's always a shirt tail fire, they call it. Always gets the arms and the face. But between our fast acting and the hood of the coat and the sweatshirt blocked the flames from his head. His hair was singed, but he wasn't burned on his face and his arms. Mm-hmm. But we were there, and a whole year went by. We weren't there a year. We were only there a couple of months. And during that time, Dr. Mullins, as I said, took me to the debriding tanks. He taught me everything because my husband was so afraid for anybody else to touch him. So they had to go through me. And I had Dr. Mullins' cell phone number, personal cell phone number. And if necessary, and I only used it twice, I could call him and he'd answer it in surgery or wherever he was. And I was my local doctor was his eyes and I was his hand. So when we went home and my husband slid off the toilet and tore that wonderful skin graft again, we went to the local doctor with all my supplies, and I was the local doctor assessed him, told Dr. Mullins what he saw, and then Dr. Mullins told me what to do, and the nurse said, "I'm glad you know what to do," and backed off. Anyway, when we got all through, Dr. Mullins kept hinting that he thought I ought to be a nurse at the end. And when it was near the last of the year, we'd go back, of course, and have, we had surgeries, we had everything. We're back and forth for a whole year. When the time was up and he was about to release my husband, he wouldn't release him until, "Will you please, have you ever wanted to be a nurse?" I said, "Well, yes." And he said, "Well," he said, "I think you ought to." And I said, "Okay, that's the best compliment anybody ever paid me." I said, "Because you must not know how old I am." He said, "I know exactly how old you are." I said, "But I've never been to college at all." And I said, "You're kidding me." And he said, "Pam, I've already taught you to be a nurse. You just need the degree. You are a nurse," is what he pretty well told me. So with my husband's encouragement, his constant encouragement, I wouldn't say yes. He said, "Well, I got somebody I want you to talk to." So he took me to the head recruiter of Doctors Hospital, and she said, "On his recommendation, you have a job here. On his recommendation, we'll put you in our school. But we know that you don't live here. We know under your present circumstances, we had no insurance. We were self-employed. My husband had a slight stroke on his 48th birthday, so we had no insurance on him. So they said, we know your circumstances. We know you can't afford to relocate. If you can, we'd love to have you here. But what we're telling you is if you're interested, go home, find a nurse you trust, ask her where you should go to school to be the kind of nurse you want to be." So I had two friends at the health department that I loved, Miss Helen and Miss Kathy. So I went to see them and I said, "Dr. Mullins won't let up on me. I know it's crazy, but he thinks I ought to go to school and be a nurse." And they didn't laugh at me or anything. And Helen said, "Oh, you need to go to Athens Tech. That'd be the best place for you to go." And anyway, that's how I ended up here. I ended up at Athens Tech in college for the first time in my life at age 55. My first day of college, I was 55 years old. I saw the Athens Tech water tower as I was driving up, and I called my husband on the cell phone. I stopped and I said, "This is crazy." I said, "I'm turning into college and I'm too old." And he said, "No, you're not." He said, "Go on." So I went on with his encouragement.
What an extraordinary story.
And he's fine. He's working today. So you know,
it occurs to me that you probably always would have been a phenomenal nurse, but that it's only through that longer than usual pathway that, you know, you bring really extra special gifts and a perspective that a young nurse just can't have. You know, they don't have that life experience. And what a wonderful testament to you and your tender touch and your innate sense of caring for others, that somebody like Dr. Mullins saw that, believed it, and would not give up.
He would not give up. He would not give up to the point of sending me to make sure I knew I had a place in school and I had a job.
Right.
And so I volunteered at Grady Burn Unit all through with the Southeastern Firefighters who took care of us. That's who runs the Chavish House. So I volunteered with Grady to see if I would like to make that drive, because, of course, I wanted to be a burn nurse.
Right.
And then I volunteer with MDA camps. I'm their camp nurse. Camp Twin Lakes is in Rutledge, where I live. So they came to me and said, "We need a camp nurse. Here's who comes to our camp. Here's who comes to our camp. Which one are you interested in?" I said, "Well," at that point I was already working rehab when I started volunteering as a nurse. And I said, "Well, this MDA camp, I know how to use Hoyer lifts and everything." I said, "That sounds good to me." So I've been their camp nurse. Of course, we didn't get to have camp this year. And sometimes it's on the 4th of July, and it's very hard for me to get off. And that's been a problem. I'm like, this is a mission. I mean, don't put this on here. This is a mission hospital. And y'all telling me I can't have the week of 4th of July off to volunteer 24 hours a day to be camp nurse.
Right.
So there are years I haven't been able to, I've had to have a substitute if it falls around the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So if it hits right, it's not a problem. If it hits wrong, it is, and then I get a little upset because I say, you know, that's what y'all want us to do. I'm not going to the Bahamas.
Right.
I'm going to stay in a cabin for a week and help little kids. But anyway, I love nursing. It's probably what I always would have done because I worked in a cardiologist office. I've worked from the time I was 13 when I decided I wasn't going to college. I had an algebra teacher, and I was not good in math. I'm good in English. I'm good in history. I'm good in a lot of things, but I am not good in math, and I'll be the first to admit it. And I absolutely hated algebra and trigonometry. I'm like, you give me numbers, and I'll give you an answer, but don't give me X's and Y's. But anyway, I had to learn that for college, but I decided, well, I'm not good in math, and she said I had to have all three maths to be a college prep, and, you know, you don't always know what you're telling a young person. And I'm like, okay. So I switched to a technical degree, and I got a job at a cardiologist office next door to the school. I wasn't even old enough to drive, and I would go to school part of the day and then go to work. So I've always worked since I was 13. And, see, they all didn't want me to get married. They all wanted me to do something medical. You need to go to college, but I did go to college.
You did it.
I just did it a little late.
Yeah.
But all those years in retail, you learn how to treat people. You know, retail's a great education on its own.
Right. But it seems to me that there's something about you that you intuitively know a healing presence. You know, it's more than just the medicine or the exercises or, you know, it's seeing that person for the person. That to me seems to be a really, you know, a gift that not everybody has and that you really bring to the patients.
Well, thank you. This year's been hard not having families. I mean, we would have one patient that we would spoil and baby and we'd be their family. And this year we've had to be everybody's family. And it's been really hard because the DAISY Awards that I have won, those have been as much the family as the patient, you know, because I'm working with the whole unit. Mm-hmm. And, we've missed that this year very much, very much.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because, mm-hmm. You know, obviously we're trying to keep everybody safe from the virus, but
The emotional toll is terrible.
Yeah. And that's a struggle when we're trying to heal body, mind, and spirit, mm-hmm. right?
Right. It's been rough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the nurses, I mean, we didn't know how much it would affect us. Mm-hmm. We didn't ever dream how much it would affect us to not have family involved. Because we had always been able to baby that one patient and be their family. But then it's
knowing
everybody.
The others were all taken care of by their family, mm-hmm. right?
The worst day was the day that the visitor policy came down during the day, the no visitor policy. And I had I call them a family. I had a patient, husband and wife had been married 60-something years, and they had never spent a night apart. So he would spend as much time as we allowed, and I had to go into that room and tell them, starting today as of now, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And he said, when can I come back? I said, you can't come back. When will I see her again? I said, when you pick her up to go home. That was, for me, one of the hardest days I had. Mm-hmm. It was the actual day that the visiting policy came down initially. Mm-hmm. It's been a tough year, but
yeah, and to have to carry that message and mm-hmm. to know the impact on him.
On him in particular. I mean, it's hard on anybody, but I knew what it meant to them because he had never spent a night away from his wife in something like 69 years. And he did everything he could to spend all as much hours as we'd let him with her until that moment. So, that really brought it home.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I hope she went home soon.
She did. That is one thing. We would try to get people better even faster. And my first thing I tell them on admission is, they say, how long will I be here? I say, well, average stay 7 to 14 days, up to 21 normally. Some people are here longer. Some go home sooner. But I want to tell you, the harder you work with your therapist, the sooner you'll get home. If you don't work, you'll be here a while. If you don't work at all, we can't keep you. But if you don't work really hard, you'll be here the longest time. And I tell them about the meetings and how we meet, and I'll discuss how they're doing and come up with a proposed go-home date that's not set in stone. I said, that date is determined by what they see of you in this first week, what you present to them that you're willing to do to get home. And that seems to be a good motivating factor with a lot of my patients that really want to go home.
I'll bet. It would be for me.
Yeah. So.
Oh, well, thank you. Is there anything else you want to say about...
Oh, I had mentioned to you about the blessing of hands, how special that was. When I came, I made the decision. I readjusted my thinking from a wound care nurse to whatever nurse I was called to be. And in readjusting that, I just fell in love with St. Mary's, the atmosphere here, the nurses, the charge nurses, the floor nurses, the techs. You know, everybody I met was so kind to me in my practicum. So I had 180 hours here. So that's a good bit of time. And I didn't realize how much I cared about St. Mary's in the very beginning until that blessing of hand ceremony. And I just stood there and cried, you know, as she anointed my hands for oil and prayed the prayer and blessed our hands. And then that was very special to me this year when our chaplain came to us and he said, we're just trying to think of something to do. You know, we know this has been hard on you. And it was not too long after I had to tell that little man he wasn't going to get to see his wife again until she went home. And he said, would anybody like their hands blessed? And I know there were like three of us immediately. He said, oh, yes. And it was just as special to me that day as the first day because I felt like we were being blessed in this new situation that we were in and that this organization cared about us enough to have people in place that were watching out for us and how we felt and how we are reacting to a pandemic. Because none of us signed up to be pandemic nurses.
No. Well, it means a lot to me to hear that because it is hard to adequately express how much leaders throughout St. Mary's value and appreciate and are in awe of what has been on the shoulders of our clinical colleagues always, but especially this past year, and trying to find meaningful ways to honor that work that you do and let you know what it means. A hand blessing is just a gesture, but it carries with it a lot of very sincere meaning and support. So I'm glad that was meaningful too.
It was very meaningful. And I appreciate having chaplains, you know, for our patients. I love the way they check with us and what needs do you have? What have you noticed? Of course, we put in the consults, but they come around and they ask you what we've noticed. Steve came by and said, do you have any COVID patients? I said, no, today we don't.
Yay!
And we all smiled, you know. But I know that he's reaching out, especially, you know, to whatever the need is. But and I have asked him for prayers for my own family. And, you know, he goes beyond just what do your patients need. You know, so there have been times I've asked for prayers when my daughter had cancer. And, you know, I appreciate those prayers. And she's good. Got her a new job in nursing administration. She's so happy.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, We are in a very sacred space taking care of patients, but really we have an obligation to be taking care of each other too, right? And the healing presence is meant for everybody, right? That mission of being a healing presence because we all come with burdens. There's not one of us in this building that doesn't have something going on behind the scenes, and trying to be gentle about that and mindful of that is really important.
And my faith means so much to me, so being at a faith-based organization is just wonderful. So I pray every day, and I certainly have prayed through COVID more earnestly than ever, and I would pray every morning when I got here for God to keep me and my coworkers and my patients that didn't already have COVID safe from COVID, and help those that did. And I would open the door out in the employee parking lot, and I would put my foot down, and I would feel, my favorite verse is "the peace that passeth all understanding," and I would just feel that wash out on me from head to toe as I step out. And then I go through my day, and I'm totally at peace. I was totally unafraid. I was volunteered to be the first COVID tester on my floor because somebody had to do it. And, you know, I was just totally fearless. Not totally fearless, I should say. In the back of my mind, I was very cautious. But I felt like that God was protecting us. And so then I would get back in the car, and when I clicked the car door shut, all the weight of the world, all the worries of the world, taking this home to my husband or my 90-year-old mother or whatever would terrify me. But I didn't feel that when I stepped out of that door. I never felt it. But I would feel it, and I might cry all the way home sometimes. But not always, but sometimes. But I didn't on the job. I mean, I felt perfectly safe here, and that God was guiding me through what I had to do.
It sounds to me like you are truly in a ministry and not just a job. You know, I don't think you feel that way about just a job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's never been just a job for me. I worked so hard to get here. I worked so hard. And I was worried about being accepted in college. And my younger, they weren't all that young, but the younger ones, they accepted me so well. And I had to succeed. I had to get on scholarship. That's the only way I was going to get here, was to make the best I could and get all the scholarships. I had the Jeanette Rankin scholarship for women, and I'm a spokesperson for them today. They were so helpful. And my daddy was a Marine, so I had my daughter found out about the Marine scholarship for children of Marines, and so they helped me all the way through school. Of course, you know, it's not just handed to it. They look at your grades, you write an essay about why you're doing what you're doing and so forth, and then you qualify in your daddy's name. So, and my father passed away before I graduated. He got to see me start college. Of course, he thought it was crazy at first, but I think he came around. And so my son took pictures. He and his fiance, who's now his wife, went with me, and I dressed in all my honor stoles, my cap and gown, at Daddy's grave. And they took pictures of me laying the flower and a little flag on his grave and throwing my hat up to heaven. That meant nothing at the graduation like it did throwing it up on his grave. So that was, I got to celebrate with Daddy.
What an amazing, beautiful.
I wish he could have been there, but he was there. And
yeah.
I had gotten him a footstone with his rank on it and everything. So it was like, yeah, here I am. I did it, Daddy. It took me a while, but I did it.
Yeah. Yeah. What a proud papa he must be.
I'm sure he really thought I was crazy like everybody else did at first. My daughters, they helped me with algebra. I said, okay, I'm not going to apply for college until y'all prove I can do algebra. So we sat at the kitchen table at my mother's, and they gave me a problem, and they gave me paper, and I did the problem. And they were over there just working, and I already had the answer, and they were working and working and working. I said, what in the world are y'all doing? And they took the paper, and they both put their heads together and looked like, what in the world did she do? They said, you have the right answer, Mother, but where are all the steps? I said, what steps? And they said, Mother, you will have to learn to do the steps.
Show your math.
So I had to learn to do the steps. I had to learn. I still think it's stupid, but I had to learn why you have to know what X and Y is.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I had an eighth grade teacher who had turned college professor who took me at my level of algebra, eighth and ninth grade. She took me there, and she got me to the next level. And then I had another wonderful professor who took me from there, and he graded all of us on the number of steps you got right. So even if the problem was wrong, you didn't make a zero. You know, each step you got right,
counted,
that's the way
something.
He graded. Yeah. So I was just really blessed with the teachers. My friends told me the right place to go, so it all worked out.
That is, yeah, we don't make it alone, right? We need lots of people.
Lots of
the way.
Support. Yeah, absolutely.
I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
Pam, thank you. You've been so generous and genuine in sharing, you know, your experience and your story. I am so appreciative of it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Another thing that meant a lot to me I didn't say was Titus learned my name the first day, I guess, I was here on orientation. Might have even been when I came to some job fair or something to apply. He learned my name. And then the next time he saw me in the hospital, he spoke to me by name. And he's just been so encouraging, and a lot of people have along the way. But just for him to take the time out to learn my name and know it the next time I came. And I always ask, how are you doing, when I see him? So,
and he really means it.
Oh, yes, he does.
Like, how are you doing, right?
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's done the same with me, and I've only been here about 2.5 years.
Uh-huh.
And he really was one of many people, but he in particular made me feel welcome and made me feel like I belonged. And that matters. That goes a long way.
Yeah, I guess it was your predecessor's arms. I walked off the stage at Jeanette Rankin last year into her arms, and she said, I'm so glad you work at St. Mary's, when I was speaking. What was her name? She's a lovely lady, one that retired right after I got here, head of mission services.
So there was Sister Pat Loom, and then there was Marilyn Williams. Mm-hmm. She was the director of spiritual care. But
the one that's like, is there like a head of mission services or something?
So it used to be Sister Pat was head of mission, and then Marilyn Williams was the director of spiritual care.
This wasn't a nun, though. She was more administrative.
Hmm.
Oh, I don't remember her name. But anyway, she was so sweet.
Yeah.
She was standing there when she said, I'm going to go call Montel right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, she was very sweet. She was here when I started here anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I hope I get to see more of you.
I hope so. It's nice meeting you.
It is so nice to have a one-on-one. You know?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. And I'm sorry I'm so boo-hoo-y.
Oh,
but
no.
But I am very emotional about
well,
what
you,
I do.
You talked about a lot of, you know,
gut-wrenching things.
Yeah, a lot of things that are, that, you know,